to just to think that a girl who, with all good intentions, just trying to help in a cause that so greatly needs help, and she comes here and she gets killed by an Israeli soldier who so blatantly ran over her and murdered her, like, totally unthinking of her human rights or her as being an equal person or anything. And then for the American government to just kind of, like, sweep that away and just, you know, take it as if it wasn't even a big deal. I mean, I'm sure, especially for her family and all her friends, like, that's a horrible thing. It totally should never, ever happen. And just the fact that it did just shows how corrupt the American government can be, that they would allow something like that to happen and to not take proper repercussions against the Israeli government, against the military, for doing such a thing. I think there's, like, a direct connection between the Israeli media and what the U.S. receives as media due to who's in power and who controls the media. And it's something that needs to be changed and something that definitely needs to be worked on, but sadly, due to the fact of how power and money has so much to do with the media, as I'm sure everyone, all Palestinians, already can see every day, it's something very hard to change.
I think that in the United States, which is the only place we can talk from, that the media coverage is not only comes from Israel physically, for the most part, but it comes from the perspective of Israel. So our understanding of the conflict here changed dramatically when our daughter started to write to us about it and what she observed. And we know that Rachel was very careful about her facts and what she would write. She writes dramatically about the people so that you understand and love them and see them as she did, but she was very careful about facts. So then I understood that I hadn't gotten the story before then.
When I called my daughters in the United States and I told them about this, and my daughters read the news every day, of course they're very interested in Palestine because I live here, they didn't hear about it. Imagine an American girl that her tax dollars, her parents' tax dollars, her friends' tax dollars paid for her death. You know, we all paid for Rachel's death.
The United States is a very special case when it comes to the powerful elements that influence the public opinion. You have the legislative bodies, the executive bodies, and you have the media. Media can be more powerful than both executive and legislative powers when well-informed and well-mobilized. But I have to say here that a lot of the influential networks or papers are influenced to a great extent by certain circles of the administration or the Congress. It's not official, because these institutions are private. But it is indirect. And that's why I'm saying influenced in a certain direction to serve the line of the administration.
And I think it comes as a surprise to a lot of Americans to know, you know, how many Palestinians have died during this last intifada. And we don't get that information very easily. Also, when we're talking about the violence, I think most people in America think about suicide bombings in Hamas. That's what they primarily hear about. And they don't hear about tanks coming into people's streets or Apache helicopters very much, you know, coming through and dropping things, houses, people dying because the house next door to them was demolished and theirs fell down too, about the olive orchards and the greenhouses and all of that. That doesn't get mentioned in the same reports.
It's true the American people do not pay much attention. And if you add to that the fact that much of the information that they get tends to be biased, in a free country, you can do that. you have the problem that we're talking about now, in which the Americans do not see the Palestinians the same way they see the Israelis, although, if they were ever to stop to think about it, it's perfectly clear that it's the Israelis who are now suppressing the Palestinians and have been for decades.
I've been a witness here, and I've seen that on four sides of Rafah, there is an enclosure. It's like a prison. The Israelis are building a prison, and the people in the world don't know about this. I was on the telephone last night to a friend and telling them what I had seen. And this friend of mine was angry. She was angry because she said, why don't we hear this on the news? Why don't I know about this? And the people of England, they want to know. And if I go back there and I speak to people, then more people will be aware of what's happening here. When I started to get the emails, and you know, they came over the course of almost 2 months, and it was eye-opening for me. And of course, I always loved to read anything Rachel wrote, no matter where she was, but it was certainly eye-opening to me. And then I decided to send them off, you know, copies off to her brother and her sister and some of our other relatives. And I remember asking my son, Chris, what do you think? And he goes, well, you just never hear this perspective. It's a perspective I, you know, really know very little about. So she really became our eyes and ears there. And Rachel wrote about her connections with children in Gaza and in Rafah specifically. She wrote about one child who went over and closed the door to the house that they were staying in because the child was afraid, a little girl, I think, that if the door was open, that then people could come through and start, I think Rachel said, thought that they would start chopping at her, doing something really violent in a child's mind, and that she thought if the door was closed, that would keep them out. She wrote about being inside a house, I think, when you know, there was military activity outside, and still the women were having some tea, and she was playing with the babies. She worked with the youth in the Youth Congress, and they were really working on democratic principles. I know at one point they had a mock trial of actually President Bush and of Prime Minister Sharon as she was observing and being a participant in this process with these children. She also mentioned how remarkable it was that the children who were in this pretty violent environment, still their recommendations for what should happen to President Bush or Ariel Sharon was that they should be taken maybe to court, to like an international court or something, for what they were doing. It wasn't that they were wishing any particular violence upon them.
Rachel Aline Coring.
Your age?
23 years old.
Your nationality?
I'm from the United States of America.
Say after me, I will.
I will.
Tell the truth.
Tell the truth.
This is Rafa Boys School. But when we went to the Youth Congress, there was a young boy. I think I'll always remember his eyes. And he made this speech, and he said that when Rachel first came, that he told his friends not to play with her because she was an American, and you know, they were sinister. but he said then he watched and saw how she did play with him. She played soccer with the kids, with the boys, football, and then he said, and then she died for them. And he said that it had changed how he felt, you know, about Americans. And when you see some of these children, you see a lot of pain, I think, in their eyes, a lot of them, that they've, it's hard to know what they've suffered, losses of parents and relatives and brothers and sisters. So it's heartwarming when you see one that feels like it's kind, what happened to her has kind of changed his view of things a little bit.
I can say, like, I am shocked by how much it touched the community in Rafah, and I believe all of Palestine. Mm. Like, the amount of respect and love and sadness the community in Rafah continues to feel for Rachel and continues to talk about and continues, I mean, they continue to build things in her honor. And talk to their children about her, and the fact that I mean, it went beyond anything any politician could do. Yeah.
I believe that Rachel is a very special person. That, you know, there's some people in life across the world that genuinely feel responsibility toward others. And I think Corey was a perfect example of that. Is Corey?
This particular incident really moved me like no other thing. And maybe it is the realization that's what she did, and of course she didn't want to die. But what she did, you know, giving her own life for the freedom of Palestinians, it was the ultimate sacrifice. So the reason I came here really is. That I wanted to know the place where Rachel Corey died and to honor her memory.
There were, as you say, stamps in her life, things that that I felt she would always do. One was her writing. She and her intense observation. She had a way of a gift, really, I think, for very acute observation of what was going on with people around her. She also had a real gift for making strong connections with people, really. I think many kinds of people felt comfortable with Rachel. So I think, again, those qualities surfaced when she was here. Well, she said, as a fifth grader, she had a list of ambitions, and a long list. It included being an actress, I think, and a poet, and a mother, and many things. But
and
one
ballet
of the
dance,
ballet
teacher,
dancer,
ballet teacher, and a humanitarian activist was one of them.
A humanitarian activist was on her list when she was 10 years old of the things she wanted to be. So I guess we should have known.
Yeah. But she also wanted to be the first woman president of the United States.
It is absolutely unacceptable for the Israeli military, under the orders of the Israeli government, to destroy the homes of innocent civilians. It can only be understood as an act of collective punishment. Often they come and on the pretext that they're destroying the houses which are used by the resistance. Well, we work in houses here in Rafah, and we know from the months that we've spent, other people have spent months here, people over the months, we have been in houses which are constantly under threat, and we know that there is no resistance going on in these houses.
Well, I always have found that to destroy the homes of people is to destroy one of the most precious and central possessions in their life. I mean, a house, to violate the sanctity of a house where people find security, protection. It's the ultimate form of violence and terrorism I can imagine. And this way of collective punishment, I think it is so barbaric and so completely in contradiction with any form of decent behavior or civilization that I just cannot grasp it, that Israelis are not coming out in huge numbers to protest against this kind of barbaric treatment.
You can see for yourself, I mean, this was a beautiful, flourishing city with families who have roots for generations. And now, and other families who came and coexisted with them were welcomed by them. It's this, you know, there used to be a railroad here. There used to be houses and people sitting outside talking for hours at night and loving things and loving each other. And now all of that is erased, just like this. And now it's like a ghost street, you know?
She loved the ocean.
It's a great picture.
Yeah. She absolutely loved the ocean, always. And I think on that same list in which she wrote that she'd like to have a cat for the sad days, I think she also wrote that it'd be nice to live where she could always see the sea. Which she found it very troubling that the children in Rafah were so close to the sea, but were cut off from it. It was very painful to her. There was a photograph of the kids when they were little, when she was a baby. This was her brother Chris and her sister Sarah sitting on the front porch out here. And so at some point she did this little drawing, watercolor wash kind of thing for me, for Mother's Day, 1998. And wrote this poem for me. I'd forgotten that was there.
She read it herself.
Yeah. Happy Mother's Day, 1998. You are my poet maker. You're the cannon I shoot from. I keep your eyes in my shirt pocket and try them on to look at daffodils. I am the bun that turned into a kumquat when I came out of your oven. Sometimes for a minute, I understand what God is when I'm looking at you. Thanks, Mama.
I'm just horrified, you know, every day that I live here, I'm horrified to see these people who are just so kind and so peaceful and so generous. Their houses destroyed, their children killed, women, men, indiscriminately. But at the same time, I'm so inspired, you know, every day I'm seeing people rebuilding their houses, you know, and people building, and people giving to each other, and people eating, and sharing their food, and sharing tea, and talking to each other. And and I learn a little bit about how to love people, how to be strong, how people can face the worst situations and still be good to one another, and still love peace. I think that here you find people that love peace more than maybe any people in the world, because they know so well what it means to be at war, that they know from experience how valuable peace can be.
The murder of Rachel made me feel that I didn't want to live anymore. I had enough. But then I thought of her, of her dedication, and I felt that I have to stay here for her. The Israeli occupation force always tries to scare us when we work down there in Palestine. They tries to make us leave Palestine. so they can continue with their dirty work unattended. By killing Rachel, they did more than scare us. They did utterly hurt us all. Now we're so hurt that they can never scare us again. We're all Palestinians now, and we refuse to live on our knees.
Their voices are calling in a whispering world, waiting for the moon. Heaven is calling from a ready shore. Counting wood, the tracks falling into their dreams, still searching for love. In morning dew, the glory is sinking through, like warriors of the night. I feel them coming home again.
Yeah.